In our new series, World War II's Greatest Battles, we chart five pivotal moments that shaped the course of the conflict with military historian James Holland. New episodes drop every Thursday on the History Extra podcast.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 nine-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine and BBC History Revealed. I'm Ellie Cawthorne. 2022 is the History Extra podcast's 15th birthday. So to mark 15 years of fascinating historical conversations, we've asked 15 historians to nominate a figure from history who they think deserves their 15 minutes of fame. Some are inspiring people who deserve more airtime today. Others are those whose significance in history has been overlooked. And some simply led fascinating and unexpected lives. In today's episode, Hannah Cusworth nominates Ina Forbes-Bonetta. Ina was a Yoruba girl from West Africa who was transported to Britain and ended up as a goddaughter of Queen Victoria, when she also became known as Sarah. Hannah tells Eleanor Evans what her story reveals about the connections between West Africa and Britain in the Victorian era.
Hannah, it's a real pleasure to be talking to you for our 15 Minutes of Fame podcast series. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to be speaking with you. And could we start by telling us about your choice? Who is Ina Forbes-Bonetta?
So Ina Forbes-Bonetta, she's often described as a Yoruba princess, and people might actually be more aware of her as Sarah Forbes-Bonetta. And she was... because she kind of enters into the British historical record in about 1850, when there's this guy called Frederick Forbes, who is a kind of really well-respected naval leader in the West African squadron. And people might be aware of the West African squadron. They were kind of around to... when the British had abolished slavery, to intercept ships of enslaved people that were leaving from West Africa, and the British would intercept and take those people and then send them back to West Africa, and Frederick Forbes, he was there to try and encourage this king Gezo is often how he's described to stop being involved in the transatlantic slave trade. And when Frederick Forbes goes to meet King Gezo, he gives Frederick Forbes this little girl. and says you can take this girl. Her parents had been killed, and you can give her to Queen Victoria as a present from me. And so that's how she enters into the historical record. And Frederick Forbes is quite surprised, but he takes her back to England on his ship, which is called Bonetta, hence why she gets called Forbes Bonetta. And she arrives back in England, and Queen Victoria kind of agrees to adopt her, effectively, kind of almost become like the godmother of this child. So that's how... we kind of get a sense of her in the English source record.
And I'm perhaps skipping us ahead a bit here, but how much is known? Is there anything known about how Ina felt about this time, this period in her life when she was sort of taken?
No, we don't know. I think we can maybe make assumptions that it would have been an incredibly traumatic time. I think maybe there is a brief record where she's reported of kind of saying that she knows that her parents were killed, but she doesn't know the whereabouts or what happened to her brothers or sisters. She's brought over to England, which would have been in many ways quite like a strange place, you know, and there as an orphan, and then kind of thrust into this meeting and kind of a relationship with the Queen of England, who I think she met, you know, Queen Victoria was pretty famous around the world, kind of known as like the Great White Queen. So I wouldn't be surprised if she kind of maybe had heard of Queen Victoria in some senses, but it must have been a really kind of scary and frightening time for her.
Certainly. And before we go much further into her story then, what brought you to Ina's story?
What brought me to her story was I was on a train back from Brighton, which is where I grew up, and I was reading a copy of David Olushoga's Black and British, and I came across her story in that book. And it was, for me, it was a really important moment because Ina, when she was a bit older, she spent a period of time living in Brighton, and the address that she lived was just around the corner from where I went to school in Brighton. And I think that sort of feeling of connection, I found it really emotional. I cried because I think I felt like when I was growing up in Brighton, that to be black in Brighton, like, was a very new thing. And to understand that there was, I mean, obviously there's lots of differences between us, right? Like, she was a Yoruba princess. But to know that the black presence in Brighton wasn't just a 20th century thing, that it was something that went back to the Victorian period, for some reason, that just really hit me. And that's how I came to her story. And I've kind of been fascinated by her life ever since.
So she's been thrust into this world of Queen Victoria's court, clearly an immense amount of upheaval for her. What happens next? What else can you tell us about her life?
So she was described, I think both by Queen Victoria and by this guy, Frederick Forbes, as being incredibly bright and intelligent. And so there was also this kind of Victorian idea, kind of a racial idea, really, about how that for sort of black people of Africans in, they wouldn't do well in Britain because of the weather, because the climate wasn't suited to them. So it was felt like the best thing for Ina was that she was to go back to West Africa. And so she went to a school that had been established there in Freetown in Sierra Leone. It was kind of a missionary kind of grammar school, and she was educated there for a while. But the sense that we get from the source record is that she was pretty unhappy. And so she came back to England and was looked after. She lived in Gillingham, actually, in Kent, and was looked after by a family that kind of had missionary connections, and by all accounts those were really, really happy times in her life. But she then is moved to Brighton under the care of, I think her name was Miss Welch, and she was there to kind of be introduced to British society. She was about sort of late teens at this point. And so she's in Brighton, and there is an arrangement for her to be married to a West African kind of businessman, James Davies, who also has a really fascinating life story. And they're married in Brighton, and there's huge press interest, and there's a huge number of like press reports about this marriage. There's apparently there are 10 horse-drawn carriages, and by some reports there's like thousands of people come out to cheer for the couple, and some really interesting like press reports about how there were kind of 16 bridesmaids, and there were sort of like like black bridesmaids and paired with white kind of groomsmen and vice versa. And there was a lot of interest in kind of how the black wedding guests were kind of conducting themselves, and lots of like praise for them in quite like racial tones. But I think there was a real kind of interest in this marriage as an example of kind of black people flourishing in Britain, and how Britain was like a very liberal place to be, to kind of have this marriage and to have this marriage celebrated so publicly.
Can we get a sense then of Ina's perspective in this story? You know, how is she feeling about this marriage, or potentially how it's being projected elsewhere?
Yeah, so I don't know. Very sadly, I think there was a letter that she wrote around about the time where she really strongly objects to the marriage. Like, she doesn't want to marry this guy. And that's pretty, in some ways, it's pretty heartbreaking, because she's already gone through this kind of tragic kind of a start in life. And we get the sense that, yeah, this isn't what she would have necessarily chosen for herself. I think one thing that is also really interesting is that on the marriage record, she records herself as Ina rather than Sarah or Sally, which was another name that was given to her. So I think historians, I think it's David Olashogo, has kind of interpreted that as her kind of asserting herself and her identity within the confines of this marriage and the kind of pressures of Victorian society.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
I also think it shows us that the history of kind of black people after slavery is much more maybe complex than we think, and that those connections between West Africa and Britain were actually really significant.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
You mentioned Sarah and Sally there. Where do those names come from? Who creates those?
I think Sally is the name that she was given when she was on the ship. So as she was coming from West Africa over to Britain, I think the kind of crew of the ship describe her or kind of give her that name, Sally. And then Sarah is the name that she's, I think, given by Captain Forbes.
So clearly she's able to assert herself and her identity in certain ways, but it's a society that obviously must be full of you know, difficulty and trauma for her. What is the broad story then of Ina's life?
The situation after she gets married is that they have their photos taken by the sort of celebrity photographer of the day, and those photos survive. And so people can take a look at them online of the sort of newlyweds. They then move back to West Africa, to Sierra Leone, and then onto Lagos, which at this point is a kind of increasingly growing and flourishing kind of centre of trade. Like, it was described at the time as the sort of Liverpool of West Africa, due to its connections with the palm oil trade, but they have children. So they have a number of children together, the first one born after their marriage, named Victoria, after Queen Victoria. and the daughter is christened and becomes a goddaughter of Queen Victoria. But sadly, Ina's health deteriorates. She contracts tuberculosis and then moves to Madeira, which is thought to be kind of maybe better for her health and the air there. But sadly, she dies in August 1880 at the age of about 37.
What particularly can Ina's life then tell us more broadly, if it can, about this vast movement of people enforced, coerced or otherwise during the Victorian era?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one thing that really struck me about Ina's story, but actually perhaps the story of her husband, James Davis, was that there was a huge amount of movement that wasn't necessarily coerced, that there were they're called Sauro, so sort of Sierra Leonean merchants, often either recaptured enslaved people themselves, or they were the children of former slaves, and that they set themselves up as businessmen in Sierra Leone and then in Lagos, Nigeria, and they were moving between Britain. They had business interests moving between Britain and West Africa. And I think it's kind of important that we understand and acknowledge these stories as well as the stories of forced migration, because I think it's important, especially for children, to know that Black people didn't only exist in the past as slaves, that they were also business people, they were traders, they were merchants, and that they had children. For example, Ina and James's child was educated at Cheltenham Ladies' College for a while, which I think would be, I felt really surprised by that, you know, that there are kind of Black children being educated in Britain's kind of top private schools in the Victorian era. And so I think it kind of, her story and the family's story really kind of makes our kind of understanding of this period a bit more complex and a bit more nuanced.
And why do you think that her story isn't as well known, or is it today?
I think it's becoming a lot better known. She was obviously quite well known about at the time in the Victorian era. And you see that through the kind of press records about her. There's then an article written by an academic from UCL, Caroline Bressy, and she talks about how it's really important for this story to be better known about. And I think that has started to happen. And in fact, there's actually a film, I think, that's in production with Cynthia Erivo, who you might have seen on Strictly as one of the guest judges, and she's been on the West End. And so I hope that that film will kind of bring Ina's story to a huge kind of level of public awareness. And so I think that she's kind of becoming a lot better known as time goes on. I think maybe as we have more interest in recovering some of these stories, these Black British histories.
Absolutely. You can imagine that bringing her to an even wider audience. That's wonderful. And we'll sort of finish up then with the potted question. Why then does Ina deserve her 15 minutes of fame?
I feel as though, because I think it's a personal thing for me, right? In the sense of learning about her story and how there's this Victorian Black presence, for me was really kind of like important moment to understand that while sometimes Black people in Britain is kind of presented as only existing since the Windrush in 48, actually it's a much larger and longer story. I also think Ina's story is a story of a West African person in Britain, when quite often when we think about Black history, we're thinking about people from the Caribbean. But increasingly in Britain, Black people are of West African heritage. And I think it's really important that some of those stories are much better known about. I also think it shows us that the history of kind of Black people after slavery is much more maybe complex than we think, and that those connections between West Africa and Britain were actually really significant during the Victorian era, and kind of gives us an insight into what happened between the end of slavery and Windrush, which I think is a period in sort of British history that actually we don't really know very much about in public consciousness or talk very much about. And so I kind of hope that Ina's story might inspire like a sort of a young British historian of kind of Nigerian heritage, maybe to go on and find out more about these stories and to make them much better known in sort of British public life.
It's been fascinating hearing about Ina's story from you today, Hannah, and thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Hannah Cusworth speaking to Eleanor Evans. Hannah's a PhD researcher with English heritage, and she's also a history education consultant. If you're enjoying this series and would like early access to more episodes to hear more historians nominating people who deserve their 15 minutes of fame, go to historyextra.com/15-minutes. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Daniel Kramer Arden.